And welcome back once again, 349th installment, Parish of the Patriots, Dawn of a New Age. I'm recording this on Saturday, which is usually what I do. It doesn't always work out that way because, man, I'm out here on my grind. I always got things going on, so sometimes I have to move that around. But this week, as is my norm, I'm recording this show on Saturday. And if everything goes according to plan, we should be recording tomorrow on Sunday. A Radio Albion Roundtable. Hopefully you've checked that out by now. And if you have checked that out, you know the big news. Sven is back. I can't tell you how glad I am. Sven is back, so we should be seeing some... We're going to see some a lot more content coming up. And I hope, from a personal standpoint, you know, for this show, I'm hoping to see the quality of my own show here get a little better because I'll have a little less going on and maybe it's just going to be more more of the same. I don't know. I do the best I can every week. So, but yeah, if you haven't checked out our roundtable show, which again should be up there, should have been posted yesterday. Unless something catastrophic goes wrong, in which case I got bigger problems to worry about than the fact that this isn't going to make any sense. If you haven't checked it out, be sure and check it out. So we are, I am particularly, I know Dr. Johnson is as well, excited to have Sven back. But hey, the show goes on here. We're going to keep on keeping on. If it's your first time tuning, we do have a Christian specific segment. That's roughly the halfway point of the show. You can tune it out. You can tune it in. It's the best part of the show, honestly. I've even considered just doing that for 30 minutes, but, you know, especially in the midst of doing the Monday Daily Nationalist and whatever, like I have been, but I've stuck with this same format. We're going to stick with the same format for this show, but we do, I put it separate, so check it out. I hope you will. If not, then I don't care. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy, pay those tithes. Got snail mail. You look on the description for the show here. The address is there. Address and envelope. I don't have anything. We're not going to do a listener supporter mailbag this week, but there it is. And it is always very much appreciated. Now, one of the things I as you know, here at Radio Albion, like I said, we're going to see some things. Sven's going to be working. I'm excited to see what he does with the site. But there is, by its very nature, there's usually going to be a lot of political-type themed content here. And as you all know, I've made no secret, I loathe political shit. I do at this point. Because it's all nonsense, it's all theater. And yet, we're going to kind of talk about in that context today. It's inescapable. I'm not saying I'm completely disinterested. I'm completely disinterested in politics. In the context of taking it seriously, like it matters. But what I am interested in these things is observing the method, you know, observing what they do and how they do it and how it works. You know, after a while, the shit gets so obvious, you're like, how do people keep falling for it? And yet they do. We've had several grand examples. It'd be this past week. Unless I'm doing it on Saturday, so I almost said this week. But this past week, we've had a couple really good examples here in the view from America. Of course, it's about the orange man. It's all about Trump. We have real good examples when you watch the method in which they direct the narrative. You know, in other words, people start talking about something and they direct the narrative in a certain way. And so all these people that are upset about something think it's being addressed and they don't even step back and realize how they're being herded like a bunch of sheep, like a bunch of cattle, like a bunch of livestock. Sometimes it makes you wonder the ultimate red pill. The Jews are right about the Goyim. Maybe they really are like livestock. You watch people. You watch people and you watch the way they're manipulated and it works. This is what I do find interesting. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Because, well, like I said, we've had a couple of really good examples. And when you see it, when you understand how it works, the fakeness and the gayness of it all. And you realize how it works. It is interesting to watch them implement these things and the way they carry them out and the fact that people fall for it. And again, that's not to be arrogant, like I'm so much smarter than everybody else. That's not it. But It's the idea of discuss. What I do am interested, I guess I want to say, is discussing it so that everybody else gets it too. Because it's fine if you just don't get it. But once you see it, this is why I think it's worth discussing. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. Once you see the way it works and you notice it, you will notice it all the time. It won't work on you anymore. That's simple. It's not about sitting here going, look at me. I hate people like that. That ain't me. You might think it's me, but it's not. Trust me. I have a very humble view of myself, if I do say so myself. Now, we had this interview. Trump sat down and did an interview. I guess it was with Magina Kelly or whatever the hell her name is. And the H-1B visa topic came up. And this was a big thing. This is one of the things. They've obviously done their polling. And, you know, what are some of the things? Because Trump, it's hard to believe. Trump has been in there less than a year. And it seems like he's been in there three. And let's just say people are not real thrilled with the MAGA agenda at this point. They're not exactly getting what they voted for. Imagine that. And I still see articles about how, you know, our democracy, you know, there's something wrong. It's broken. No, it's not broken. I was just reading an article somewhere before recording the show. They did a survey and the majority of people think there's something wrong with our democracy. And it's broken. All that tells me is the majority of people don't understand how it works, because it's not broken. The system is running like a well-oiled machine. It just doesn't do what they told you. It's that simple. If it's just a matter of the democracy has got a glitch in it, there's a glitch in the democracy system. It's got a miss. It's like your car was running fine. Now it has a miss and you got to take it to the mechanic to figure out what the hell is wrong with it. If that was the case with the democracy, then all of the Western democracies, not all of them, would have the exact same problems, would not be doing the exact same things over and over and over again. And yet that's not what we see, is it? So this tells us this is the way it's designed to work. They just told you it does something that it doesn't do. It's running just fine. But anyway, nevertheless, they no doubt have done their polling. And one of the things Trump's supporters are upset about is, you know, he'd come out several times doing about this H-1B visa thing. And we got to bring more people, the best talent from all over the world with H-1B visa. I don't do a good Trump. I always did a good Bill Clinton, in my opinion.
You know, I feel your pain. No one can prove these salacious accusations against me.
But, this was one of the things of many. The people were upset with Trump, not happy with Trump. The H-1B visa. Now, when you say H-1B visa, we all know what that means. That means Indians. Isn't it? No, I mean, when this came up, I remember the first time he brought this up. This was when he was still being publicly cozy with Elon Musk. And they were talking about pushing this H-1B visa thing. And they were openly saying they were going to bring basically people from India to take, you know, to work in the tech sector. The point here is, we know what H-1B visa is about. When people talk about H-1B visa, we're talking about Indians. But you watch this interview and the H-1B visa topic comes up. And you think, because I haven't watched the whole interview, I just watched the clips, probably the same damn clips y'all have, because I ain't got time for all that. But anyway, so the H-1B visa topic comes up. Hard-hitting questions, right? So she's confronted Trump about how his MAGA people are not happy about this H-1B visa thing. And immediately, what did the conversation turn into? How many Chinese are coming into the country? There's 600,000 Chinese students coming to study at American universities. And it turned into this whole nonsensical roundabout going back and forth about whether or not Chinese should be able to come to America. And Trump is like, they spend a lot of money in our universities. And historically, black colleges, they would collapse without this money from Chinese students that aren't going there, or some other gibberish. It was all gibberish. Well, you had this whole thing, and then afterwards, the fallout, you have these people posting up content going on about, why do we got 600,000 Chinamen coming into the country? You see how they directed it? Now, the topic of H-1B visas has nothing to do with bringing in Indians, which is what H-1B visas are for. They're not a student visa. When you see it, you can't unsee it. they bring up sheep. They bring up H-1B visas. This isn't a surprise question. This is all scripted out. She brings up the H-1B visa thing. And the conversation is how many Chinese are coming to America to study in the university. I don't know about you. I don't give a shit. I really don't. When you look at all of the crap things in this country, the list, the number of Chinese coming to study at American universities is not even in my top 10 things that I give a shit about. Is it in yours? But you see how they steal that? Now you're talking about the H-1B visa, but the actual conversation being had is how many Chinese? She says, this is crack me up. In this interview, Magina Kelly there, she says, yeah, but why are we letting them in? They spy on us. They steal our intellectual property. You see, they're reinforcing the anti-China rhetoric. They take the H-1B visa thing, and instead of discussing having Indians come in and replace all these American workers, instead we're talking about how many Chinese are coming here, and she has to make this point that they spy on us and steal our intellectual property. Look, I got a news break for you. Everybody does that shit. And then Trump went off on this rambling thing about France, and no one knew what the hell that had to do with anything. Because I hear this argument all the time. You know, when these people talk about China, they spy on us. They steal our intellectual property. They're stealing our jobs. The government subsidized corporations to move the jobs over there and steal shit. But these two points here, they spy on us and they steal our intellectual property. Literally everybody does that, including the United States itself. You know, Israel, our supposed greatest ally, spies on us all the time. And they're pretty brazen about it, which I guess they would be, because if they get caught, nothing's going to happen. But this idea, they spy on us and steal. Everybody does that. You know, just as an example. If, let's say, there's in the automotive, we use the automotive industry. And let's say Mercedes-Benz has been studying, researching, and developing a new cutting-edge technology in their cars, for their cars. I know. And they have a breakthrough, and they introduce their new whatever class Mercedes sedan, and they unveil this new cutting-edge driver technology for their car. Do you think the American manufacturers are going to go, oh, wow, Mercedes has this new cutting edge technology and people are excited about it? Let's start from scratch and research our own version of it. No, when they can just go down to the dealership, buy a new Mercedes, bring it back, cover it over with a tarp on a wrecker, bring it back, drive it back to their plant and tear it apart and reverse engineer it. What do you think they're going to do? What do you think the American car manufacturing corporations are going to do? You think they're going to go, wow, we got to rush out and start from scratch and come up with our own version? Or do you think they're just going to buy a Mercedes, bring it back, tear it down, and reverse engineer it and spend a fraction of the amount of money it would take? What do you think they're going to do? It's laughable. Everybody does that. That's literally everybody acting like, oh, China's stealing. They're just sneaking around, you know, little masks on, stealing our intellectual property. Nowhere in that discussion in this interview were they even talking about bringing Indians in, which is what people were upset about. You know, where did the term the jeetification of the country come? That was being thrown around on social media because everybody was talking about Indians. As everybody knew, they're talking about Indians. But you see, she brings it up in a quote unquote confrontational manner. But see, they keep the narrative contained to China. See, China is, that's who we got to demonize. It's all about how many Chinese students. Again, H-1B is not a student visa. They're not even on the same topic. They just shifted it, but everybody assumes. And again, you see all these content creators out there and they popping up talking about how outraged they are that they're letting all these Chinese come in and study at college. Again, who gives a shit? You know, I don't care. Americans could be going to college. But Americans could be going to college and be in those spots. But they're letting these Chinamen come in here. Trump says, but they come in and they spend a lot of money. They have to pay extra for the tuition to come in here. Maybe we should be asking, why do they have the money to pay the extra for the tuition and we don't? Don't ask that question, because supposedly we're having this booming, wonderful economy, remember? This is the way they steer, though. This is the way they steer the conversation. So it looks like he's being called out on the carpet. But see, now, any chatter about it online, social media, all the conversations are about how many Chinese are coming and how it's outrageous that we're letting these evil Chinese come in and study at university. Who gives a shit? But they spy on us and steal our intellectual property. What student at a university is got access to anything that the Chinese government wants spied on? Hey, I'm a part-time student. And also, I work at your nuclear weapons plant. I mean, that's not. It's they turn the conversation into gibberish, and people think they're actually having the conversation, and they don't even notice that they've changed the entire conversation. They're talking about an approved topic now. It's fine to be outraged and over the fact that Chinese students are coming to study at university and nobody's talking about replacing your job with Indians. So you see, that continues. It's not like the policy change. That continues. They continue with the importing of the Indians because they work cheaper. When you see the way they do these things, see, one of the things that just really opens your mind about how this is all theater is it is interesting to me. This is one of the interesting aspects of these political things. It's not the politics itself. That's just theater. That's just fake as shit. But it is the... Once you recognize the theater and the way they do it, it's just observing the method is interesting because it works. It works really well. Like this example we just talked about, it worked. Smashing success. Very few people were stopping and going, wait, why are we talking about Chinese students studying at university? H-1B is about Indians coming in and replacing our jobs. They keep the conversation within approved confines. When things are kind of breaking out, they redirect it and build a new fence to keep the conversation within approved confines. The Epstein thing is another grand example of stepping back and watching the way this is directed. You know, the whole thing. There's so many ways they have shifted that to direct that conversation, and people just watch and they just keep moving on. The Epstein one is a little more complicated because they've used several different methods over the course of this controversy. Well, they've used so many different methods. You know, they've steered that one so many different times. It's a little more complicated to get into, but I will go ahead and wade off into it. I got time. We'll go ahead and wade off into it real quick. For starters, one of the aspects, I guess I was sitting here kind of stumbling over my words because I was trying to decide how best to go about it. We'll look at several of the ways in which, and then we'll finish off with this latest controversy that's been going around. You know, because again, they've done their polling data, and this is one of the things people are upset about with Trump. Is, you know, the Epstein files. Suddenly it became they don't exist. It was a hoax from the Democrats or whatever all along. And they direct the conversation away from what was really going on. So let's start from that point. What was really going on with the Epstein thing? Y'all, this is old news to y'all, but we have to lay it out. Let's go ahead and set down what we're talking about. It was not a blackmail. I see that narrative, and this is a part of redirecting it within confined, approved confines. We start at the center of the truth. What was Epstein doing? You know, this guy was like a nobody math teacher, and all of a sudden he's super rich and having an island and all these people. You know, it was not a blackmail. This is how they've directed it into. It was a blackmail operation. It was not a blackmail operation. If you want to move, remember, these people are moneylenders. And a moneylender, if you go to your bank, they're going to want collateral. You go to your bank and you say, I want to borrow $10,000. And the bank's going to say, what kind of collateral do you got? And you can say, nothing. Just loan it to me on my word. More than likely, they're going to laugh in your face and tell you to leave. Now, if you go into the bank and say, I want to borrow $10,000 and I have my house, which is paid for, I can put that up as collateral. They'll give you the $10,000, pat you on the back, and send you on their way. These people want collateral. It's the same thing in politics. It's approached from the same way. You're in this political position, and you would like to move up to a higher political position. What do you have as collateral? To make sure that you're not going to get into a higher position and then turn on the people that you work for and decide that you're going to start running things yourself. You need some sort of collateral. And, you know, for lower positions, it's not a lot. They don't have to have a lot of collateral. Maybe, you know, the common knowledge that, you know, 3 years ago you screwed around on your wife or something. You know, that's fine for the lower position. But when you start talking about becoming a senator or a big name celebrity who's going to come out with political opinions or a president of the United States, you're going to have some collateral for that, because you're going to have access to power that if it was turned against your owners, it could be a real problem for them. They want collateral, which makes sense, doesn't it? So when you want to move up to one of these positions, you go. There's no blackmail. Blackmail means you don't know. You know, I don't know if you're secretly sneaking around and going over to your neighbor's house when he's not there and banging his old lady, and somebody knows about it and catches you on film. And then, you know, they start telling you, I'm going to let this out if you don't start paying me money. That's blackmail. You didn't know. You'd have been more discreet if you knew. You didn't know he was filming you. This is not blackmail. They know. They want to move up, become a senator, become a congressman, become a president, sit on a committee. They go to Epstein's Island, and they know they're being recorded. It's being documented. This is their collateral that they're putting forth, doing whatever. Nothing good. You know. When you look at the widely accepted various forms of sexual degeneracy in this country, it's not anything good. But that's what, it's not blackmail. See, this is the way. So this is what the operation was. And it's a Mossad operation. This is also obvious. And I mean, obvious to the point a lot of people, even the people claiming falsely that it's blackmail, are even saying it was a Mossad operation. It had Mossad written all over it. Our greatest ally. But hey, they don't spy on us or steal our intellectual property, at least. Now, this one is a big deal because it is a Mossad operation. And so there's been a lot of effort going into directing public discourse about it and building new fences and new narratives. When it looks like the cattle are going to break out of the pen, they build a new fence and allow some of them to go over to this other area and feel like they're getting new information, but they just built a new fence to keep the conversation. Like, for instance, talking about it being a blackmail operation when it's not a blackmail operation. I mean, what would you rather it be? Your politicians are doing scandalous things and they got caught? Everybody that went to Epstein's Island knew what they were going there for. It wasn't a blackmail operation. Or would you rather know that they're so corrupt, they will, I don't know, do whatever unimaginable, horrible things in order to get more power? What's more disconcerting to you? Another way they keep muddying this, they have, and this has been going on for a while, is they keep, we can go back to the Megyn Kelly thing. She said something about Epstein, all this talk about him being a pedophile. He wasn't a pedophile. And I see content creators again. It comes across my YouTube feed. I don't click on the videos. And they're like, oh, my gosh, she's offending pedos now. This is one of the long-term muddying tactics they've used on the Epstein thing, is they keep calling him a pedophile. You see, a lot of criticism about the Epstein stuff, a lot of that's directed to. And there's muddying of the water of calling him a pedophile when they're talking about teenage girls, which is, you know, you can look, this isn't about having that debate. We're not going off into an age of consent discussion. But if you can go look up the dictionary definition of what a pedophile is, prepubescent, and then, you know, they're throwing around the pedophile term while also talking about what amounts to teenage hookers. You see, this is the way they muddy the discussion, and they keep it controlled that way. So now people are going back. Because if you're talking about pedophilia, but there's no examples of children here, you know, prepubescent children here, then you're not having a truthful discussion. Does that make sense? Now you're discussing the evil pedophile. And again, you have a case of name calling. You know, I'm sure Jeffrey Epstein, you know, he's running a Mossad operation, no doubt, overall a piece of shit. I don't think he's dead. I think he's sitting back somewhere sipping margaritas on a beach. Don't have that discussion. Let's have a big argument over, oh my gosh, you say he's not a pedophile. I'm saying there's no evidence that he's a pedophile. He probably was. Because this goes back to the, you know, I'm sorry, but banging an underage girl, as much degeneracy as in this country, that's probably not enough collateral. It probably had to get into something a little more degenerate than that. But I don't know. Oh, you're defending a pedophile. I'm saying there's been no evidence thus far presented that he was a pedophile. There's just not. That's the truth. You see, now everything gets sidetracked into these arguments about what's a pedophile or not. Gosh, she was only 17 years old and six. She was only 17 years and 6 months old. What is wrong, you freaking sicko? You see, you're not having the discussion. Now we're not talking about they were putting up collateral and, wow, this is another sign of, gee, I just wonder why all these politicians, you know, give all these standing ovations to Netanyahu when he shows up at Congress. Maybe it all makes a little more sense. And see, you're not having that conversation. You're arguing over what's the definition of a pedophile. When you already have a definition. See how it works. They just keep the conversation. They allow you to get outraged. They allow the conversation, but they keep it fenced in so it doesn't get outside. And if it starts to get outside, they build a chute so the cattle will then go down here and start arguing over something that they don't care about. Now, this past week, this is why it came to mind, this past week, there's this big thing going around. Somebody, I saw this pop up on the internet before it kind of started making it into the news. You know, oh my gosh, the redactors missed it. Do you believe that? They missed some emails between Epstein and his brother talking about Trump. They missed it and it accidentally got, do you believe that? I don't think you do. I give y'all, I hold y'all in fairly high regard. I like to believe our audience here at Radio Albion is relatively intelligent. They missed this, and these slipped through the cracks. These emails, and they're talking about Trump. And they said, oh, because there's a line in there where it says something about, oh, do you think Putin knows about Trump blowing Bubba? I'm not trying to be vulgar. This is what's it's in the news. They're talking about this in the news. I'm not being vulgar here, but this is the vulgar content. That the Epsteins were going back and forth. And people are going out there now. And oh my gosh, they had material. Trump was giving oral sex to Bill Clinton, because Bubba was one of the nicknames for Bill Clinton. They've got video of him giving a blowjob to Bill Clinton. And people are being serious about this shit. And but they believe it. Because people will always look. This one of the reasons this tactic works is because all you have to do is throw something out there that people want to believe. In this context, you can throw it out there and the lefties want to believe something like that. So it doesn't matter how stupid and ridiculous it is, they're going to bite it because they want to believe it in the first place. If you flipped it around and this same exact scenario came out 2 years ago, and only it was Joe Biden instead of Trump, then the MAGA people would jump all over and bite into it and not stop and go, well, that's kind of ridiculous. I doubt that's the case. You know, because they want to believe it. This is one of the reasons this tactic works. If you're throwing something out there that a significant segment of your target wants to believe already, they're going to jump on it and amplify it. See, it has to be amplified and it has to look quasi-organic. And the way you do that is, you know, you have a significant, in this context of what we're talking about here, you got a significant amount of run-of-the-mill lefties, they want to believe that Donald Trump was giving a blowjob to Bill Clinton. So you throw that out there, and instead of going, wow, that's kind of ridiculous and stupid, they want to believe it, so they jump on it and they amplify it. And when the whole thing is ridiculous on its face, starting with, oh, they just so happened to miss it. It just so happened to get missed, and it got leaked out. And now we've got some juicy information. We know this is real. Why? Because they're telling us. And even if it is real, and if you ask me, I have no way of knowing. I suspect maybe it is, but it's a nothing burger. Does Putin know about Trump blowing Bubba? That does not literally mean having oral sex. I'm doing my best not to be vulgar. I'm not trying to be funny and vulgar here at all. This is the topic. This is what they're talking about. When, in a matter of course, like, let's say you're at your job, and you will hear this. If you're a man, you're a woman, this is foreign gibberish to you, so you just take my word for it. But if you're a man, and you're at your job, and somebody's talking about one of your coworkers, and they're making jokes in the break room, and that coworker isn't anywhere around, and they're like, yeah, you know, we all know he constantly in there blowing the boss, isn't he? Nobody's saying that he's giving oral sex to the boss. Nobody said, oh my gosh, you mean he's literally giving a blowjob to the boss? No, everybody understands. He's always in there sucking up to this guy. I mean, this is a, when I first, then they were trying to act like this meant literally. I mean, the first thing that popped into my mind is, yeah, they're talking about apparently Trump was up Clinton's ass, you know, sucking up to him all the time. No, it means he was literally having oral sex with Bill Clinton. Oh my gosh. Now, instead of talking about, I don't know, maybe something like Trump's horrible speech before the Israeli Knesset, where he's bragging about how Miriam Adelson just basically lives at the White House, has given him all this money and tells him what to do and how much she loves Israel. Instead of talking about that, we're seriously going to have an argument over whether or not Trump was literally having oral sex with Bill Clinton. You see how it works? We're not talking about the Mossad operation, how it worked. We're not talking about, wow, it's kind of embarrassing. Our president goes up there and is essentially bowing down in the Knesset and bragging about how much, you know, what happened to the Trump that said he didn't need their money? What happened to that? Well, now we're bragging openly about how Miriam Adelson just comes in the White House like she owns the place, because she pretty much does, and how much she loves Israel and how much Trump has done for Israel. We're not going to do that. We're now you see it's been redirected. Whether or not he literally had oral sex with Bill Clinton, which is so stupid. And people ask me, people wonder why I don't care about politics. I don't care about politics in the context of taking it seriously. But I am interested in the method, because it works. It works so well. And that tells me, because I am interested on a fundamental level about human nature and the way people tick and what makes them do the things they do. So when I watch this method and how well it works and the way people just keep falling for it and doing it over and over again, I do find that interesting. That I am interested in. It's not that I care. It's all theater as far as political policy and this back and forth. They finally ended the government shutdown because that wasn't really ever getting any traction. No one gave a shit. So they had to wrap that whole thing up. You know, just watching the method and how well it works. And it does. It works really well. That's interesting to me. Because then you have to ask, well, why does it work so well? Why do people keep falling for something that really, if you just step back for a minute, I'm just an average person. And I can see it. How come so few other people? How come so many people keep falling for it over and over again? When it's really pretty obvious if you just step back from it. This is why they want people emotionally involved in this political shit. I see people, you know, oh my gosh, they're trying to divide us and they're trying to stir up a civil war. Well, what they're trying to do is keep people emotionally invested in the system. Because if you step back from the system and you're not emotionally invested in it, you realize how it works and you realize it's pointless to pretend that you're going to affect any kind of real change in the way your country is through the system. The system, as I said, it's working as designed. They want you emotionally. They can't get you. The system is so fake, gay, and stupid. They can't get you intellectually invested in the system. So they have to get you emotionally invested in the system because it's easier to manipulate you. That's all they got. So that's why they, what do you think the purpose of drag time story hour was and all of that trannies in the girls' bathroom? That's to get people on the right side, all emotionally invested. My gosh, the tranny stuff. And this, you know, my gosh, Bill Clinton was probably having oral sex. Or, I'm sorry, Donald Trump was probably giving oral sex to Bill Clinton. That's to get the left side emotionally. And that's the whole mayor of New York City thing. That's keep him whipped up, emotionally invested. He's going to redistribute. He's going to tax the rich and we're going to be able to afford our apartments again. Emotionally invested. He's one of us. We got a man of the people in there. Emotionally invested. That's why so much of it reeks of like celebrity gossip, because it's to get you emotionally invested. And it works. It works for a number of reasons, not the least of which is, by and large, this nation consists of a godless people. That'll be a discussion for another day. We need to get into the Christian specific segment. We got to keep this thing rolling. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's Christian specific segment here at the Parish of the Patriots. One of the things that I find amazing is this mindset that, well, we know so much better because things, you know, are different. And we have observable results of that. And yet most people don't seem to ever stop to consider that they may be wrong. I don't know if this just goes back to human nature of never wanting to admit you're wrong or exactly what it is. But we look around at clown world today, especially in the Christian perspective, in the Christian area, and we have this over the top. I don't know what to call it. We've gone beyond heresy. It's so ridiculous. And it's easy to think this just happened. You know, this just started now. And yet you can look back and the seeds were planted. I can remember people's attitudes even when I was a child. And things were more or less normal. But yet I can look back and see where the seeds for this were planted even back then. As that was a good example. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, we're just doing verses 34 and 35. Paul writes, "Let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is not permitted for them to speak, but they are commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. And if they will learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is a shame for a woman to speak in the church." This is one of those verses that, of course, you're 100% guaranteed are going to be ignored in the vast majority of any church. If you go to any church denomination here in the U.S., just pick one. Throw a dart. Make a map. Throw a dart. Go in there. You're not going to hear this. If somebody does stumble upon it or stumble across it, you're going to hear something along the lines of, well, because this is what I've heard my whole life when passages like this come up, be it this or talking about, you know, a woman is supposed to obey her husband and then the traditional marriage vows. You're going to hear something along the lines of, well, it's different now. I think one of the things I've heard a lot is well, you know, they didn't really agree with that, but because of the culture at the time, they couldn't push too far because then people, and I've heard this applied to things that Jesus himself taught. Well, he could only push so far. You know, the culture This was a part of the culture at the time. And so, you know, these things had to be drawn up in the context of the culture. But he already knew that, you know, there was a better way. The modern way. You know, things are different now. We know better now. See, we're enlightened. We have greater understanding. And as you know, I'm big. I don't think there's anything wrong with questioning the Lord in the context of, and we had this discussion before. You know, I don't agree with these preachers and whatever and say, don't you dare question anything about the Lord or he's going to be mad at you. There's nothing wrong with that. That is what we're supposed to be doing. The correct context, however, needs to be questioning to try to understand and to try to learn about God. As long as you're questioning because you want to understand what he's doing, why he's doing, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. If you're questioning in the context of essentially you're arguing, you're saying that's not right. And oh no, you know, then that's when you're spiritually in trouble because your heart's not in the right place. Now, what makes these sorts of passages in particular, not suffering a woman to speak in church, don't let women speak in church if she's got questions or if she thinks she has figured something out, let her go home. When she gets home, let her ask her husband, go over it with him, not bust up with some female nonsense in the middle of when we're trying to have church. And what amazes me about this is you have the results. You know, it's one thing if you're going to say, well, you know, people want to say, well, it's different now. You know, well, but when you say that and people still say that in the context that now we have the results, we can look around, look across the denomination of Christian churches in the West today. And you have your results. Who was right? We've run the experiment. Okay, we've run the experiment. Let's see who's right. Jesus Christ, with what he said, the Apostle Paul, what he wrote here. We'll put the Apostle Paul here in this corner. And the MCC, modern Christianity, and there were more enlightened nonsense in this corner. And let's judge by the results. When Jesus said, by their fruits you will know them, that doesn't just apply to people. That applies to ideas as well. And we've borne the fruit. This idea that, oh, well, that's nonsense. Just in fact, we need to let women be preachers and we need to let women sit on the committees and we need to give women leadership roles in the churches. And this will be great because we're enlightened now. That's been going on my whole life. It started, you know, and now we have the results. Now we have the results. The results are in. The experiment is over. This isn't a matter of let's see how it turns out. Now we can see how it's turned out. Now, who's right? Was the Apostle Paul right? Or modern the MCC, are they right? Because I look around at these churches, at these denominations that have all women in all these positions and basically running everything. And I'm looking at the results and it is not even close. You know, this isn't a photo finish here. By their fruits you will know them, by the results of the idea. You know, we know who was right. And yet people still be like, well, it was different then. You can't say that now. Isn't it amazing? We're getting a bigger and bigger list now of things you can't say. You can't say that. Watch people all the time with their things you can't say. The list just keeps bigger and bigger, even in the churches. You can't tell a woman that she's got to obey her husband. Oh, I don't like that. We don't say that part anymore. Women keep silent in churches. Hell, we need to let her run the whole thing. It'll be better. The results are in. This is no longer a theory. This is no longer a hypothesis that the Apostle Paul didn't know what the hell he was talking about. This is no longer any of that because the experiment has been run. and we've got the results. And now everybody's bitching about the results. And if you say, well, look at here. Oh, no, no. That isn't it. It's kind of like it reminds me of how mathematically, now that we have genetic science, because I'm not anti-science, now that we have advances in, you know, mapping, you know, DNA genes and gene mutations, and they can actually study the rate of gene mutations, it's been mathematically proven that Darwin's quote-unquote theory, underlying theory, Darwin's theory of evolution has been mathematically proven to be impossible. So in other words, it failed the experiment. It's been proven. They can observe how long genetic mutations take place. And, you know, it just even going off of simple organisms, not something complex like a monkey. And mathematically, there's nowhere even close to enough time for just random genetic mutations to set in and spread through a population. The theory, Darwin's theory, has been completely scientifically disproven. That's fact. And yet they still cling to it like it's real. They'll still talk about evolution. If you watch a sci-fi movie, a sci-fi show, and evolution comes up, they'll act like, you know, they're showing you what's supposed to be going on in the future. You know, mankind out there flying on their spaceship. Man, hell, we can't even keep the potholes patched in the damn road. But don't worry. If we get... If we conquer the patriarchy and whatever the hell else we need to conquer, you know, the sooner we do, we're going to be flying through the stars. Our future is bright. And they're talking about evolution. Oh, these people evolved from that. They act like it's still real. Like it's just, that's just a given. When it's, the results are in. And it's not, but they just cling to it like it's real. And it's the same thing with this sort of stuff. You read these passages in the Bible and everybody be like, well, it's different now. Yeah, you're right. It's different. Does it look better? Different doesn't always mean it's going to be good. Things are different now. No shit. Now, I don't like the difference. What about you? Yeah, I don't like it either. Maybe the Apostle Paul was right. No, those times were different. One of the great things, one of the, getting older kind of sucks, you know, because your body hurts more. You don't, you know, you get out of shape and basically it kind of lingers with you and, you know, physically. But there are good things about it. You know, pattern recognition, you have more time to draw off of for pattern recognition and things such as that. And another one of the great things about getting old is the fact that the older you get, the more you don't give a shit. You know, you run into like some guy and they'll be like, oh, he's such a crotchety old man, you know, and you're like, man, yeah. And you start talking to this quote unquote crotchety old man and you realize, well, it's not that he's just crotchety. He just don't give a shit. He just says what he thinks. It's kind of like that. People don't want to point these things here out because it'll offend the women, you know, it'll offend the women. See, I don't give a shit. I don't care. It comes back to the whole thing. To complain all you want to about women. Let me hold that thought. You'll see these same patterns when people can't defend their position. As I have pointed out here. This ignoring this and the times are different. And all of this, the results are in. You know, judge for yourself. This attitude or what Apostle Paul said, which is correct. And I'm not putting, to be clear, I'm not putting all of the problems with the modern churches just on women. This is just a single example. There's a lot of stuff going on. Okay. Is there a lot of stuff? But you'll point this out and what do people say? You hate women. This is no different than you're an anti-Semite. You're a racist. When the name calling comes in, you can just stop. Seriously, just, from my standpoint, once that starts, I've made my point. Once somebody has to fall on, you hate women, you're an anti-Semite, you're a racist, I'm done because I've proved, you know, the point's proven. Nobody has anything else to draw off of because now they're just name calling. You know, they got nothing else. They're just name calling. go back to where I started here a minute ago. You complain about women all you want to. Simps are a bigger cancer. And this is just an extension of simping. You know, I mean, it may not be simping in the relationship form, but it's a form of Christian simping. Simping in the church. If they had a word for it, maybe Paul just didn't have a word for it. And so, you know, he spelled it out simply. Thou shalt not simp. There was, it's so obvious. And yet, we need to add it to it. Thou shalt not simp. Simps in the church, the bane of our existence. This is what enables. It's not women. Women just do what they be do when they come up with crazy stuff. It's the simps that jump up. Yeah, and you wonder, what are they getting? You know, what are they getting at? Because like you know, in the traditional context, when you're talking about simps, you know, it's usually in interpersonal, when personal relationships or social circles, and you'll say, man, that guy's such a simp. And the underlying insinuation is he's hoping to have a chance for sexual opportunity with the woman in question. In the church, I don't know what the hell it is. You know, maybe it's these guys that have like, I don't know, they were raised by a domineering single mom or something, and they still have this just embedded mindset of they have to seek mommy's approval. And that extends out to random women become stand-ins for mommy. I don't know. I'm not trying to play pseudo psychoanalyst. I can't stand it when people do that. But you do have to wonder where it comes from, because you have the behavior. You have men that will simp in the church. And you have to assume that they're not hoping for sexual access. Maybe they are. I don't know. But it's the damn simps. They're the ones that pour the gas on the fire. If men stand up and say, well, this is stupid, and it has something concerning an idea or whatever that a woman came up with, you're guaranteed you're going to have an army of simps jump up and ready to go to war to defend M'lady's honor for her moronic idea that you've pointed out is a moronic idea. But the older you get, you don't give a shit. This is why I don't bother. I don't go to a church. I don't attend a church. I'm not discouraging anybody from doing it. I don't discourage you, because it can, as bad as it can be, I do think it can help you, as long, I do think it can be a positive. I think you need to be discerning if you pick a church to go to. In other words, don't just walk in the first one and say, this is the one. Be discerning, you know. If you decide, because some people need that. I mean, God has blessed me that, you know, I self-study enough and whatnot. But that doesn't work for everybody. I'm not being arrogant. Believe me, I'm not. A lot of people do need that socialization, that interaction in a church setting. And we're not supposed to give up on meeting like that. So there's nothing wrong with that, but be discerning. Like, if you go and you say, I need to go find a church, I need to go attend services every week. You know, if you roll up on a church and they have an Israel flag hanging off of it, don't go in there. I mean, just don't. They're telling you out front. You know, think of it as the flag of Satan. And just, okay, well, you know, this isn't the place, so you can keep on going. If they have one of those light up signs with messages, you know, And the message is something like, we stand with Israel, or we stand with the latest thing. Don't go in there. You they're telling you, they're advertising up front so that you don't waste your time. And when you do go in, this is what I recommend. When you do, I mean, give them a chance. Look, they're not going to get everything right. You're not going to go into a church and listen to a preacher there and you're going to agree with every single thing he has to say. He isn't going to get everything right. Hell, I'm not claiming I get everything right. You know, just give a listen. See if it looks like they're really making the effort. And then look around and see how the church functions. How many leadership roles do women have in the church? How much influence do women have in the church? Do they embrace sin as being a-okay? You know, in other words, is their doctrine of salvation one that Jesus Christ is nothing more than a get-out-of-sin-free card and no effort is required on your part? See, just get an overall feel for it. And don't get involved in debates. You show up, you're checking out a church, and, you know, maybe you attend two or three times, you're making your decision if this is going to be the place you're going to go. And maybe someone in the church or the preacher is talking to you and is like, well, what do you think? You know, you've come into, you want to become a member of the church, and you've got some points that you have contention here. So it's time to bring those up. Don't do that shit. They didn't ask for your opinion. Don't give it. No, I mean that. Yeah. It's not your role to set them straight. If you think you can get something out of attending there, attend. You know, if you think they're preaching complete heresy and nonsense, get the hell out of there and don't have anything to do with them. You know, but don't stand there and start a debate and start giving a, well, let me tell you, here's a list of stuff you got wrong, Reverend. Nobody's going to listen to that. You're not going to endear yourself to anybody. It's not your job. Line them out. You know. Don't get me wrong. We stand with the truth. But in this context, you're the one trying to decide if you fit in here. They didn't ask you to come in and enlighten them. No, you know, they didn't. They're simply, what they're asking you is, are you going to feel at home here? That's the question. They're not asking you, how much do you agree with what we say? And by all means, grace us with your profound wisdom and set us straight. Nobody asked you for that shit. They know you've been attending for a couple of weeks and, you know, they're asking, do you think you're going to fit in here? Are you interested in becoming a member of our church? That's the question. They didn't ask for your whole long line of biblical knowledge to line them out and set them straight. Is it yes or no? Or hey, I need to attend a few more times, but I like it here. You seem like a bunch of nice people. And again, look, don't look for perfection because you're not going to get it anywhere. You're wasting your time. If it ain't the place for you, they're preaching heresy and nonsense, and just leave. Come up out of them, as Jesus said. Come up out of them, then don't have anything to do with them. Go to the next place. No one asked you to come in and start arguing because you're not going to convince anybody with that. They're already set in their ways. They've been there doing what they're doing for a long time. You ain't going to walk in and shine the light on them and set them straight. See, another thing getting older does, because I attribute this to the fact that, you know, there's not that much time left. You know, I mean, for like me, I'm in my late 50s now. And, you know, if I live another 20 years, I'll be in my late 70s. And statistically speaking, probably dead or close to being dead. Close to being dead. And that's if I live out a normal life. Don't do any more cancer or get in any accidents or anything like that. And 20 years is nothing. 20 years. I was on, this is getting off track, but I was scrolling through and some little short videos popped up in my YouTube feed, you know, of high schoolers in the 80s, you know, and that was when I was in high school in the 80s. And, you know, they had old films and they were running old films that people, home movie things that people filmed in the high schools back in the 80s, you know. And it just brings a smile to your face. It's like, those were the days, you know. I'm a sucker for girls with big hair. And it seems like yesterday. I mean, in one way, it does seem like a long time ago. In another way, it seemed like yesterday. 20 years ago. All right, that definitely seems like that. So another 20 years is nothing. So basically, you become very keenly aware there's not that much time left anyway. And as an extension of that, I have zero tolerance for wasting my time. I don't want to waste my time. And arguing with people, debating with people that have no intention of changing their mind, that is one of the biggest waste of time you can do. I don't have that much time left. I'm going to spend it the way I want to as much as I can. It's not always possible, but as much as I can. If I have a choice in the matter, I'm not wasting my time. I'm not going to sit here and argue with somebody that has, you know, no intention of changing their mind. And getting mixed up in anybody else's drama. It was like in the book of Proverbs, I read one of the Proverbs the other day, because that I'm in Proverbs, and I'm always studying a book in the Old Testament, a book in the New Testament. My Old Testament book right now is Proverbs. And one of the Proverbs says that basically a man, I'm doing off the top of my head, but you know, a man that gets involved in a strife, not his own, is like a man who grabs a dog by the ears. You know, and dogs back then weren't like our dogs now. They were like basically one step below wolves, and they just like attack you and stuff. He's like a guy that walked down the street and just grab a random dog by the ears and then be surprised when he gets all chewed up. Such as a man that gets involved in a strife, not his own. He gets involved in someone else's contention. See something going on, just say, yeah, I'm going to wait off in the middle of this. Gets involved in other people's drama. Say, I ain't got time for all that. I ain't got that much time left. I don't got time for it. Not wasting my time. Not going to sit around and argue with people that have a different position. They have no intent. They're not asking me, hey, I've had this position for years. And I'm thinking, maybe I'm wrong. What do you think? That's a different thing. Somebody's asking for your opinion. Just seeing somebody other than you're going to go argue with them. Just grab a wild dog by the ears. You grab somebody's pit bull named Princess by the ears. See how that works out. But anyway, getting back around. This stuff didn't just crop up. What we're seeing now is the results of this experiment. Of we can ignore certain parts of the Bible because it was a different time. It was a different culture. Jesus said such and such because, well, you know, that was the culture then, and he couldn't push too far. Like, where do you ever see Jesus being afraid to push too far? He pushed far enough that they tortured and executed him. I would say that wasn't a real big concern. But it's different now. Yes, you're right. It is different now. And we've got the results of that. And different does not mean good. It doesn't mean better. We got the results, and yet people keep defending the position. It's different now. We're enlightened. I don't want to give up this quote-unquote enlightenment that we've had, even though the results over and over and over. You know, and you can apply this all over the place. You know, when people bring up, you know, letting women vote was a really bad idea. And it is related to what we're talking about here. Because, you know, Paul didn't say this because he quote unquote hates women. Obviously, he didn't. You know, a lot of the times the apostles, the people in the church that made sure they were taken care of were all women. they were all women. So he didn't hate women. You read in his letters where he has special mention for certain women in the church that, you know, did such a good job of helping taking care of and nurture the church. There was a reason. There is an order to the way things work in this world, in this creation, this realm that God created for us. And if we stay within the confines of the system, if you understand how the system works, in other words, God's laws, the laws of the system that we live in, this creation, the better time you're going to have, the better things are going to work out for you. But it was different then. You can apply it like what I started to say, and I kind of got off track. In other words, these things also apply to things not directly related to the church. In other words, if you point out letting women have the right to vote was a huge mistake. You see, it's related to what Paul said right here because it's the same underlying principle is why he said it. He didn't say what he said because he hates women. He said what he said because there's an underlying truth here, and that truth gets reflected even outside of the church. So you can point out looking around in the country today and saying, wow, letting women vote was really stupid. What the hell were our ancestors thinking? That was a really dumb idea. It hasn't worked out. You hate women. What? Again, the same underlying truth. And once again, we have the results. We've had several generations. We've had generations of women's suffrage, women voting. Doesn't look good. The results are in, and the results are suboptimal, to say the least, to put it generously. The results are what I would call suboptimal. So what about it? But you're not allowed to even say, you're not supposed to even acknowledge the truth of the results of what's happened. We're supposed to know the only answer. Yes, things are bad. The only answer is we got to double down. Then you have the political simps, you know,
that'll come out and be like, you know, I think this, we ought to just let women run everything because we men are made a mess of things. Simp.
Political simp. Let's just let women run everything. Yes, if every country had a Kajakalas in charge. My gosh, can you imagine if if we all had that? What was that one woman? Where, God, where was she from? She was a thing, you know, a couple of years ago. A lot of guys were all, I've heard of Finland or something. I don't even remember. I can't even remember her name. It escapes my head off the top of my head because I don't care really. But, you know, and she was the prime minister or whatever the hell. And then there was kind of a quasi scandal because, you know, video come out that she was whoring it up and doing coke or whatever at a party. And because, of course, she was. Just imagine if we had her. If we just had an army of women like her running the country, by gosh, we would just be so much better off. Men have made a mess of things. Well, yeah, that's true to an extent. So we need to double down on some of the results of these messes, you know, some of these policies that made things a mess. Let's just do more of it. That's the answer. Anyway, that's getting off track. When you read the Bible and you get tempted to brush things off and say, well, that was a different time. That was a different, they had a different viewpoint at that time. Well, stop and step back from that. And look at it and say, but were they wrong, though? You know, was Paul wrong to say, you know, women need to keep silent in the church and keep it at home, rely on her husband? Again, this is why dedicating our lives to understanding God, to understanding, you know, and the one of the primary vehicles we do that through is the Bible, because this is our written record. And you look at these things and say, but were they wrong? We have the end results. We know that Paul didn't, quote unquote, hate women. He speaks glowingly of certain women in the churches. Sometimes they would go out and they would go to a new town. The apostles would go to a new town. And it's like, well, the only people that would, you know, interested in listening to them or maybe were already had started in the faith were women. So they would start with a church of nothing but women. So you can't say, oh, they hated women. That's just that name-calling thing. But when you get tempted to just brush things off and say, well, that was just different then, stop and say, you know, stop and restudy it. You know, step back and try to look for the greater context. Another good example of this, and I'm running a little long here probably, but another good example of this is, for instance, when Jesus would talk about how slaves should behave. Of course, Americans think the only slavery that ever existed in the history of the world was slavery of Africans and the U.S. because Americans think that everything, the entire history of the planet from its creation to now, is somehow centered around the U.S. When Jesus spoke about slaves, and, you know, slaves, be obedient to your masters and have the correct mindset. You know, don't go at it with, look, this is your position. Make the best of it. Think of it as, you know, the way you apply, the way you serve God. You know, do a good job for your master. But they were tying them to a tree and whipping. That's not how slavery worked. That's a discussion for another day. But people will sit there and say, well, Jesus should have taken that opportunity to give a lecture about how slavery was wrong. Why didn't he? Because it exists. It's always existed. It exists today. More than likely, a lot of you listening now are a slave. They let you go home. But if you were working for somebody else, you're a slave. I've spent most of my life in servitude as a slave. And you have too. Anytime you're working for somebody else, you are in servitude. The only difference is slavery in those days was the master. He provided their housing, health care, food, all of that. And they probably got, in a lot of cases, they got a little wage so they could go to town. Yes, they could go to town on their own and, you know, buy some things extra that they wanted. We have like the worst form of slavery now. Where's your health care? Where's your owner-provided home? You don't get any of that. They give you a check at the end of the week and tell you good luck on having a home or paying your doctor bills or buying food. That's all on you. I don't have to provide any of that. I provide you with the smallest check possible, and the rest of that stuff, that's your problem. And if I can hire a slave a little bit cheaper from India or whatever, then whew, here we go. You're out the door. You could be homeless. Would you rather be a homeless person pushing a buggy around, living under a bridge? Or would you rather be a servant? Would you rather be a slave and have your house provided for, your housing provided for, your clothing, your food, health care? You tell me. Like I say, I've spent most of my life in service as a slave. Because again, if you're working for somebody else, don't kid yourself. You were a slave. You're a wage slave. They give you a wage instead of providing all the other stuff. But it's the same thing. You are being told when to get up. You are being told when to start a project. You're told what to do, when to do it. You have your times that you're allowed to leave. You in every sense of the term, you're a slave. No different than people were back then. And people were like, oh my God, slavery. Why didn't Jesus tell them that slavery was a sin? And you a slave yourself, and you don't even know it. See how it changed? You're still a slave. Slavery still exists, but now everybody thinks they're free. You ain't going to have to deal with disgruntled slaves because slaves all think they're free. It's a pretty good little game, and it's probably a discussion we should continue at another time, but we do have to wrap up for this week. I appreciate you joining me for the show. Hope you got something out of it. And, of course, as always, hope to see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.